Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSH Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSH Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of men, women, and children affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSH Society Radio. Hey, welcome to the show. This is the FSH Society Radio Show, and thanks for being here. Another month, another episode, and it feels like sometimes it's just too long in between episodes, I'll tell you. But I'm glad to sit in the chair again as we're now in the month of November, almost at the end of, what year is it? 2017. Wow, it's almost over. Yeah, just like that, right? So thanks for being here. Thanks for spending some time with me live here on FSH Society Radio. Want to hear from you this episode and beyond. You can contact me in many different ways. You can dial into the show if you'd like at 949-270-5953. That's always a great way to get a hold of me. You can now send me an email directly. Even during the show, I can access that as well. Directly to me is fshradiohost@gmail.com. That's right to yours truly, Tim, here, and I can interact with you that way. Or even after the show, if you got questions about the show or whatnot, please feel free to reach out to me that way. We're also on Twitter, at FSH Society, Facebook, /FSH Society on there. The email for the society is fsh@fshsociety.org, or I believe it could be info@fshsociety.org, and on the web, fshsociety.org. So we got all those great contact ways and plugs in there for you, and hope you can take advantage of that. Also, Blog Talk Radio has a really cool, fantastic chat room, so you can go ahead and chat away. Actually, I see a Facebook follower, Z Zielinski, is in the chat room, so please join her, and I know we're gonna have some guest questions as well for our guest. Our featured guest tonight is actor Max Adler, and Max is spending some time with us today to talk about his acting life, talk about new projects maybe coming up and what he's up to, as well as his work with the FSH Society and how FSH has affected his family. So we're going to sit and talk with him as well, looking really forward to him and spending some time talking with Max. I think he's going to be a great guest, and looking forward to that chat as well. Being November, though, right? I mean, I think people have and I think it's a good thing to think about what you're thankful for. You know, Thanksgiving was about a week ago, right? So, you know, for me, of course, I'm always thankful for my, you know, family and my sons, my beautiful wife, and the fact that my parents are still here that I can share Thanksgiving with, and even though we didn't share it this year, they were under the weather, but I always find time for them and my in-laws. I'm always grateful for those things, and I hope that you have those things to be grateful for as well. But I'm also grateful because I met some very awesome gentlemen over the last couple weeks and made a profound connection with them. And so excited to meet them. So this is kind of where my monologue goes, what I've done this month. And I don't know if you know the film, odds are you do, called I'll Push You. It's a documentary about Patrick Gray and Justin Cisuk that they took this big pilgrimage hike. I believe it's in Spain, and it's like 500 miles. And Justin is in a wheelchair. He has, you know, a neuromuscular disease. MAMA, I believe, is the abbreviation, but you can look it up. Go to, I'llPushYou.com, and all the information's there. But they had this great documentary, which I saw, and honestly, it moved me quite a bit because I'm also grateful that I'm not in a wheelchair as of yet, or my body has not broken down to that point yet. And I'm happy I'm still mobile and able to do things I can do believe me. And seeing this, it was very, it just pulled on my heartstrings and emotionally very, very many different ways. And watching these guys go through this journey of taking this hike, because that's what they did in this documentary, where Justin wanted to do this pilgrimage and Patrick simply said, I'll push you. They've been friends since they were born, and they actually born, I guess, in the same hospital, like days apart. Their families are very close, and that's how tight they've been throughout their lives. Now they're like in their 40s, and they took on this pilgrimage, and that's what the documentary was about, which is what I saw. But they're also on tour doing things, you know, talking to companies and doing speaking engagements, you know, about this book and about the inspiration behind it and all of it, the whole encompassing story. And turns out I follow them on Facebook, and they're coming to Milwaukee, which is where I'm at, or near there. And I said, hey, jokingly, I'll buy you a brat when you come in town. And they took me up on it. Well, I didn't buy them a brat. But I did meet up with them, along with two other great, fantastic people in my area. One lives in Milwaukee, one lives in Waukesha, two great ladies. And so, what's that? The five of us only at Miller Time Pub had some pretzels and some drinks and had a great conversation. I made this fantastic face-to-face connection, and it blew my mind that they took the time out, very busy schedule, and I'm efforting to get them on, hopefully, at FSH Society Radio Show in the very near future as well. So I guess I'm grateful and thankful that I've met the people I've met in this process. I've only been diagnosed not even officially a year yet, and I made a promise to myself and to whatever this was that I had as I was still trying to figure it out. Whatever the hell this is, I think I said to my wife, I'm going to fight. I'm not going to sit. I can't. Whatever I find out what this is, because it must be something. And sure enough, we know what it is. And I think, like so many of you, you're fighting. You know, you might not be advocating, on the very front lines, but you're backing it up. Maybe you're donating money. Maybe you're spending time with someone that has this disease, or whatever your story is, whatever your battle is with it, we're all in there. We're all in the trenches, and I'm thankful for that. So, you know, more or less, you know, that to me is what it's kind of all about. Not to get super corny, super cheesy about it, but it's usually not my style. But I just wanted to share that because, you know, to me, I've kind of stopped and I've thought about this. I thought, if I didn't have FSH, okay, it's kind of, you know, then what would I be? Because honestly, it's kind of sad in a weird angle, but it's like, it's become me now, as in, I talk about it openly. I talk about the FSH Society and how people donate money. I mean, it's like one of those first things that I'm going to talk about. I spread it on Facebook. I try to get involved as much as I possibly can, even though I'm still involved with so many other things, of course, you know, with having two active kids and a wife that's back in college and this and that. But I love doing this show. And by far, one of my, you know, on my thankful list, this show for sure is on there. And for Jun Kinoshita to see that, the FSA decided to see that, hey, this could be a great way to network, to get people involved, and to be a place, a community, almost like a support group, if you will, for all of you that want to chat in the chat room or email me directly, because not everybody's going to want to call. You know, I know this. It takes sometimes a brave soul to call into a show, even one of this nature, to, you know, talk about certain things. But we'll have Max Adler coming on, you know, soon, about 12 after the hour. And then we will be having Jun Kinoshita join us in on the conversation as well later in the interview, and we'll kind of roll with it from there. So why don't we take our first break, and when we come back, we'll bring in our featured guest, Mr. Max Adler, and we'll talk a little bit with him. You're listening to the FSH Society Radio Show. You're listening to FSH Society Radio. Hey everyone, this is Tim, host of FSH Society Radio. And get this, in 2014, a Dutch team reported that aerobic exercise training and cognitive behavioral therapy decreased fatigue and improved the quality of life significantly for FSHD patients. This suggests a marked impact in slowing the degeneration of affected muscles. So I don't want to hear any excuses. You can get out there, get active, start exercising, and let's start fighting this thing. Hi, this is Tim again, and have you been recently diagnosed with FSHD and kind of trying to search for answers? I mean, there's so many questions. Where do you go? Well, go to fshsociety.org. Join the FSH Society. Get educated, because knowledge is power. Get active. Connect with local members. Volunteer for research and donate, because without you, we can't fight this. Go to fshsociety.org. Hey, welcome back to the show, FSH Society Radio. And we're live here, and later in the show, I'll be able to field some of your calls if you'd like, 949-270-5953. Wait for my cue on that, though, because don't want to mix up too many of the calls. But we have some great questions that we lined up via Twitter and Facebook for our featured guest tonight, who is none other than actor Max Adler. And we will have him joining us right now. Hello, Max. How are you?
Well, hello there. I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. First off, thank you for taking the time out of your schedule and joining us tonight to share a little time with us. I really appreciate that.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me. Thank you for your punctuality. You're right on the money with 612, and thank you for doing this show and getting the word out and spreading awareness and kind of, you know, building and strengthening the community that already exists. And it's very exciting, and I'm honored to be a part of it. So thanks for having me.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm not always punctual. It's very nice you said that. And now that it's in a recorded format, I can share that with wife and say, see, Max Adler said have good time.
You're batting a thousand with me. You're one for one. So you're a punctual man in my book.
Well, let's talk a little bit. First off, I mean, I love to give people a little. I mean, you're a pretty popular guy. Let's just face it. So people know who you are. But I love to kind of hear, roll back the tape of your life and kind of go maybe a little bit of where did it start. So my first question for you is where did I guess the passion or the idea of, hey, I want to be an actor. Where did that first start for you?
Man, it goes really far back. I loved going to the movies with my dad. It was such an escape and such a joy and, you know, such an event that I look forward to and sitting in the theater. And I mean, I think like the first movie I remember seeing was The Firm with Tom Cruise. And it just hit me that like the story on screen had this profound effect on the entire audience. And, you know, everyone, you know, people come from different backgrounds and, you know, religions and financial status, and they were all sitting and going through the same kind of emotions and process together. And, you know, they left changed and they had this kind of community experience. And just for those 2 hours, they were bonded. And it was just kind of this beautiful thing that hit me. And I wanted to tell stories. And I in middle school, I enrolled in a summer camp for singing actors.
That's nice considering with your Glee work that you were in that to start with.
Yeah, I love doing theater. I come from theater, and that was the first experience. I, you know, did my first play in middle school, did, you know, plays all through high school. And really, you know, those curtain calls in senior year of high school, I knew I didn't want it to end. I just knew that it felt so good. And I loved the camaraderie of the cast and crew and the effect it had on the audience. And, I just knew I had to keep doing this and there was nothing else that was going to make me as happy. And I had planned on going to ASU, Arizona State, for broadcast journalism because I figured acting was a long shot and being a news anchor, I'd still kind of make it on TV and, you know, read a script and have a wardrobe and, you know, the whole deal. But my mom, you know, had FSH and suffered from that and also had Lyme disease and she passed away really unexpectedly and suddenly right in the beginning of my senior year, which kind of altered my entire perspective on life and how much time any of us have and, you know, going for your dreams. So it was really
right.
Then, you know, she had always encouraged me to pursue the arts. She, you know, she was a dancer and went to NYU for dancing. And then when all the diseases kind of hit, was unable to live her dream. And so she always kind of pushed me. And so really, once she had passed, I kind of said to my dad and my little brother, like, look, I'm just going to go out there and, you know, do this for her. And you know, you get one shot and I'm going to go after my plan A. So I graduated high school, kind of worked all summer as a valet, saved up a few grand and, you know, drove 6 hours west from Arizona with my brother in my car, and my dad following us. And then, you know, yeah. And then the struggle began. And then I got to LA and then, so yeah, and then, you know, a few years of doing the restaurant valet thing and bouncing around doing commercials and little gigs on TV shows and just kind of hustling, grinding, figuring out how the business works, you know, who's who. And then when I was 22 was when I got Glee, and that, you know, just changed my entire life and allowed me to leave the restaurant game behind and become a full-time actor. And then that was incredible. So that's kind of where we are, and I can keep going or whatever else you want to ask about.
You know, when you say that, how you kind of you bounced around, I'd imagine it was probably rough in the beginning trying to get acting gigs and paying gigs. You know, I'm sure there's that turning point, and it sounds like Glee was it when you got that first paying job or significant where you could quit, like you said, the restaurant work and those things you were doing. What was that moment like when you got that first, you know, check, so to speak, you know, from acting?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, here's what's crazy is, you know, when I first started, it was just, you know, I got cast and it was supposed to be like a 2-line, 1-day thing. It was very, very small. I never knew that the character was going to come back or it would become what it ended up, you know, eventually becoming. And so there was, you know, an episode here, an episode there. And, you know, when you're starting out, it's really not great. I know, you know, people think, oh, you're on Glee, you got a house in the hills and a Ferrari. And I'm like, no, I was just able to go buy my dinner tonight without going overdrawn. So the first 5 episodes I did of Glee, I was still working at a restaurant. I was still a host at a restaurant and just going back and forth from living my dream one night and then getting yelled at by customers the next day. And it was kind of a, you know, really screws with your mind a little bit, but and once I started getting more and more Glee and then, you know, saving up, then that was a dream, because it was just like, you know, I didn't move to LA to become a waiter, and so to be able to kind of leave that after 4 or 5 years really was the dream, and just to be able to, you know, pay bills and get by with acting was really all I ever kind of wanted, and so it was a pretty fulfilling experience, and not to mention that it was a high school show choir show, which I had come from, you know, musical theater and show choir, and Ryan Murphy was behind it, and Nip Tuck was one of my favorite shows in high school, which he did.
Absolutely.
So it was all just this kind of perfect storm of, like, you know, disbelief, and it was all surreal, you know, and then to play that a character that, you know, for anyone who may not know is listening, you know, started off as this just standard bully who was throwing slushies in the choir kids' faces and, you know, just a real tormenting kind of jerk. And then you find out that, you know, he's closeted and he's hiding that he's homosexual himself. And he's kind of, you know, jealous that others can be themselves and be comfortable with themselves. And, you know, through that, he ends up kind of just changing completely and, you know, attempting suicide. And it was quite an arc to play at a time when, you know, cyberbullying and suicide, and I mean, even now it continues, unfortunately, but it really kind of hit a peak right around, you know, when these episodes were airing. So just to kind of be able to represent people out there that were going through this and having a tough time kind of communicating it to their families and friends, and then hearing from them around the world, you know, thanking me for the portrayal of the character and how it's helped them kind of get closer with their parents or, you know, their brothers and sisters or not commit suicide was incredible. And then that opened my eyes to the fact that, you know, media isn't just entertainment. It really is so powerful and it can change lives. Mm. So it was quite an experience to kind of have that happen as my first big break, I guess.
Yeah, because that was a significant episode. If I look back, I mean, that was what it was titled Never Been Kissed. And that was kind of a if I'm getting the episodes right, where that all kind of came out, you know, lack of a better term, where it all kind of came out and
and
what was that like then, though, playing that character with those? It sounds like a roller coaster of emotions, where you're this bully, and then he's coming out, and then the aftermath after that. Was that difficult to kind of make those transformations?
I mean, again, it was kind of the dream that I had been waiting for. You know, it's one of those, like, when you're starting out,
right,
you get these very, typecast, kind of stereotypical, you know, two-line or, you know, one-scene kind of parts where you're really just kind of there to forward all the main characters' storylines. And, you know, there's nothing too complicated or you know, there's not much of an arc your character goes on or a journey or, you know, a big change. So to already be in this role and then kind of having them write it, you know, for me and around me, that became just this dream role. Like, you know, what a complex guy. You know, he's feeling all this stuff inside, but he's expressing, you know, this on the outside. But, you know, what he's saying is this and what he's thinking is this. And, you know, oh, this explains everything, you know, the reason of why he's been doing what he's been doing. So the work was, I was working with a great private coach, Jeff Prizer, and I would just, you know, get the script and we would meet up and just spend hours dissecting, you know, each scene, each line, all the subtext, you know, what's really being said. And so by the time I got to set, I knew this character and this guy so well. And then to have excellent actors, you know, acting right across from me and bringing their A game, you know, particularly Chris Colfer, who's phenomenal and just upped my game. You know, we just kind of found some magical moments in there that clicked with us. And then I think, you know, translated to affecting the audience in the way that we kind of hoped. So it was just kind of a cool little zeitgeist moment that happened. And I remember, like, the first time right when that episode aired, it was so crazy. I had gotten invited to go speak at the Kennedy Center, for the Anti-Defamation League. And, you know, give a whole speech and kind of, you know, MC it along with a couple of other Glee co-stars. And that was just the first time. It was like, I think it was the first time I had been asked for an autograph or, you know, like, recognized. And it was this whole, just a crazy culmination of, like, the episode had just aired days ago. And here I am, like, in D.C. at the Kennedy Center. And I was like, okay, like, this, you know, we're not in Kansas anymore kind of a moment. And it was a very cool moment. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit of a whirlwind, it sounds like. Kind of
campaign. Yeah, it certainly was.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it all kind of happened very quickly. But at the same time, it's, you know, four years, you know, I had been kind of, you know, waiting for that moment. So it's funny because it did happen quickly, but it's also like in the moments leading up to it, it was that, right, you know, is this ever going to happen? Am I going to have to go back to college kind of stuff? So it was very fulfilling for it to all kind of work out the way it did.
Now, how did you start working then with the FSH Society? I know you've done some events and some work with them. Can you talk about how that blend started?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, once, you know, the Glee stuff started picking up, and then this is right when, you know, Twitter and social media was kind of having its big boom, and there was, you know, a lot of, I remember, you know, at a certain point, there was like 120,000 followers and I had gone with my wife now, my then girlfriend, to a U2 Black Eyed Peas concert at the Rose Bowl. And I remember that there was like 90,000 people in the audience and, you know, sold out. And Jen, my wife, had said to me, she's like, look, you have 120,000 followers. Like, this is what 90,000 people looks like. And I was like, wait, instead of seeing a number on the screen, I was like, whoa, like that, like, I, you know, you can type something and that many eyeballs, like, are seeing it. Like, that is some responsibility. So at that moment, I was like, you know, so my mom had FSH and my grandma had FSH and I had seen it my whole life. You know, it scared me because I didn't really know much about it. And, you know, my friends knew nothing. You know, they confused it with multiple sclerosis or whatever.
Right.
You know, they had no idea what it was, how it affected you. Is there a cure? Blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, look, like, if I can reach this many people, like, I'm going to get the word out about muscular dystrophy, about FSH, like, educate this entire kind of younger community of, you know, teens that are watching the show about what this disease is, how it affects people, what people can do to help, and just kind of, you know, remove any mystery or, you know, stigma that was associated with the unknown entity of it, and kind of just hopefully make it more of a, you know, conversational topic and a, you know, shine a light on what this disease is. So I literally just kind of Googled, like, muscular dystrophy and, you know, MDA, and I called them blindly and just said, you know, here's who I am, and, you know, I've got some following, and I would love to help in any way that I can. And so they sent me to their headquarters in Tucson, where I met with Kevin Moran and a few different doctors and scientists, and, you know, we all kind of sat in this huge conference room, and they just kind of educated me for hours and, you know, taught me all about the different, you know, genomes, you know, genes and DNA and what they're working on and, you know, what universities are close to coming up with a cure. And it really just got me hopeful and educated. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go share this with, you know, 100,000 people. And so I did. So then that's kind of was my mission. And so through social media, through walks, whether, you know, in Irvine or Griffith Park, you know, people would come from around the world, around the nation, and just kind of, you know, be there to show their support, to raise money, raise awareness. And it was just a very exciting community. And then I really got, you know, I left kind of the Muscular Dystrophy Association because it's so large and they already had such great publicity and, you know, an amazing machine when, you know, back when like Jerry Lewis and the telethon. And I was right. Like, well, you know, FSH was the specific disease that affected my mom and my grandma. So like, let's get more specific. And then that's when the lovely, phenomenal June Kinoshita, you know, contacted me and we talked and then she introduced me to everyone that she knew. And then I started really getting, you know, behind FSH and working with them on their galas downtown in LA. You know, just doing PSAs and, you know, filming things for them in New York and going to their events and just, you know, shining a light and raising as many, you know, kind of raising awareness and drawing as many eyeballs as I could to what this is and, you know, what's going on with it, what the progress is and, you know, where people can give, you know, donate money. And
right.
Because we are closer and closer every time I talk to June. So it's I just feel like we're right on the verge of something really exciting. So if I can be a small piece of that, then, you know, that's kind of a tribute to my mom and grandma, really.
Absolutely. Now it's funny that you bring up June because actually it looks like she's dialed in. So why don't we bring her? Maybe she has a question to ask you, you know, some of the burden off of me, I guess. Hi June, how are you?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Tim? Yeah.
Hey, Max. How are you?
Hi.
Hi, Tim. This is delightful.
Hello.
I love technology.
How about this?
I'm happy to. I've been listening in. And first, one thing I wanted to say, I wanted to give a shout out to Amy Beckier, who is our board member and incredible advocate in San Diego. So I think she's the one who first spotted you, Max. And reached out to
you
somehow.
Amy,
so
the Irvine walks, and
that's right.
She was, you know, equally as passionate as you, and really stayed in communication and contact with me, and kept inviting me back, and really working, with me and you to keep it going. You know, the last 5 or 6 years and all the galas and everything. So, Amy's been absolutely incredible and a huge part of why I'm involved with FSH as well.
Yeah, and it goes to show because we are a small but mighty shop, but we really rely on our our members out there, wherever you are listening, to come to us with ideas. You're out there, you know, paying attention, finding things, and finding, you know, not that we want to replace you, Max, but if there's a next Max Adler out there, we'd love to also find him.
I'll let him call it.
In terms of, you know, just as an advocate for the society.
Yeah,
so, no one can replace you. So,
and it's also FSH where I realized one of the biggest, you know, selling points of why I was so excited to be working with you guys was the fact that, you know, all the charity navigation awards and, you know, the fact that all the money actually goes to, 100% goes to the research and, you know, there's nothing – you know, nothing weird happening. There's no cuts or profits. You know, it's really all just people raising money to battle this disease. And so I was excited to be a part of something so special.
And we're so it's been a wonderful partnership. So so one thing I wanted to ask you, and I hope it's not too much of a stretch, but I thought, you know, since you played the role of Karofsky and, you know, this whole, you know, the complexity, the cycle, you know, you had to get inside the psychology of somebody who was having trouble coming out, and then the process and how it changed him to come out of the closet as a gay, young gay man. And I thought, you know, often I, you know, I meet so many patients, I talk to so many families around the country who are affected by FSH muscular dystrophy, and there's a similar kind of coming out process, or, you know, I should say closeted and then coming out process that many patients describe to me. And so I was wondering if you could maybe say something in terms of any insight you've gained, both as an actor in this part and as an advocate, because you've now, you know, you've become a real a spokesperson also for the LGBTQ community and, you know, anti-bullying and all that. So what sort of, what advice, you know, what insights did you gain from that work, and maybe what words, you know, advice or, you know, can you give to people out there listening who might be in the closet about having FSHD and struggling with how to come out?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, two big things come to my mind immediately that I think kind of correlate to both, you know, homosexuality and FSH. I'd say one is realizing that, you know, there's nothing wrong with your condition, meaning there's nothing to be ashamed of, there's nothing to be hidden, you know, you just, you are what you are, and if anything, you know, it makes you unique, it makes you special, it makes you stand out, you kind of, you know, own who you are. And I think that was that's the biggest thing with both, is that I think there sometimes is a shame or a stigma in being different, which leads people to think that, you know, they're not entitled to a life of equality or love, or, you know, being treated kindly, or that, you know, they deserve to be treated in a poor way. And that was the thing I heard a lot. And so I think the important thing is to realize, to remove that and to lift any kind of shame associated with it, and just kind of, you know, own who you are, and that you can still be, you know, the best you, and your inner strength and your love, and, you know, the way you go through the world is really kind of what shapes you, and instead of a label. I mean, that's part one. And then I think, you know, part two, kind of goes hand in hand with that, which is talk about it. Which, you know, with my character and the suicide attempt, he just felt like there was no one in the world that he could talk to about what was going on. He just, you know, there's no outreach, there's no outlet, and, you know, he felt he was trapped in this hole, and so the only answer was to escape life. But if you find that there's always one person at the very least, like, you know, one person, whether it's a neighbor, a friend, a teacher, a parent, a cousin, someone will be there for you, will understand, will get it, will support you, will help you. And so, you know, don't retreat into the darkness, and kind of step out into the light and you know, outreach and find someone just to kind of bond with and connect to and get it off your chest. Because there's nothing to hide. You know, it's who you are, just like if I have, you know, brown eyes or blue eyes, really. And so, I guess those are the things that kind of come to my mind.
That's beautiful. Thank you. And, and I want to say one of the things, that I've realized is such an important role FSH Society plays is we are there for you. If you don't have anyone to talk to, you can call us,
right,
or email us, or, you know, find us on social media, and we'll talk to you. Whatever you're afraid of, you know, we can answer your questions. We're, you know, with integrity, honesty, but, you know, we try to balance the reality of the disease with also the optimism of, you know, so many people I've met who have this disease who, are, you know, just adapt and are able to fulfill their dreams, live out very full lives. And that's something people need to hear, especially if they're young and they don't know, you know, they've just gotten this diagnosis and don't know what it means for them and how it's going to affect their life. We're here to talk to you about it and also to connect you with other people who have actually walked in your shoes. And I think that provides so much reassurance and support for people. So
I agree. And also, I mean, I have to say that it is such a loving, embracing, you know, welcoming, supportive community. Every walk I've ever been to, every, you know, gala we've done downtown, every event in New York, you know, wherever I go, it's such a loving group of people that just wants to help each other and, you know, share any intel they know about the disease or, you know, about the research and, you know, help you with anything, you know, with finding medical equipment or, you know, little, you know, just tricks of the trade about how to, you know, live your best life with this disease. And you're right. It really is. There's a community there just waiting for anyone. Again, much like, you know, with teen suicides or, you know, coming out, there's, you know, there's suicide hotlines and there's, you know, people, the Trevor Project and people to call. So same thing with FSH. There is just this beautiful community nationwide that is, you know, waiting for anybody's call or email if you want to just talk about it and kind of vent.
Yeah. And, you know,
now,
I'm wondering, you grew up with your mother and your grandmother both with this condition, but what was it like for them? Did they have support? Were they isolated? Did they know what they were dealing with? What can you tell us a little bit about what it was like for them?
Yeah, you're right. No, I mean, they were isolated. They did not know what they were dealing with, which is, again, I think, you know, kind of enhances my commitment to educating people about what it is and what they're dealing with. I mean, you know, my grandma, I mean, as long as I've ever known her, you know, she had been in a motorized scooter that was attached to the back of her car. And, you know, she always was hunched over, you know, could never really lift up her head properly, had trouble smiling, could not drink through a straw, could not whistle. You know, if she took a fall from the scooter, you know, on her way from like the bed to the bathroom in the middle of the night, I remember, you know, she would call my mom and dad and, you know, they'd race over there in the middle of the night just to pick her up off the floor. And I mean, it was pretty, you know, pretty gruesome stuff happening that really obviously affects your way of living. And then my mom, I saw the whole transformation of being completely healthy really through her early to mid 30s. And then right around like 38, 39, 40 is when FSH kind of, you know, took hold and went into full effect. And it was this transition of, you know, she started just moving around the house, kind of leaning, you know, hunched over on this rolling, like, you know, a scooter, like kind of like wheels, or like a stool really. And she would kind of get from room to room by, you know, using this stool on wheels to support her. I remember, you know, if she wanted to cook dinner, she couldn't reach up to get a plate or a mug because her arm just didn't reach up that high anymore because, you know, her shoulders and neck and everything started to deteriorate. And, you know, it's pretty heartbreaking because she's, you know, it's like she's so angry that her body is betraying her mind. You know, she grew up doing things a certain way and wanting to live a certain way. And all of a sudden, you know, the muscles are just gone and she couldn't do what, you know, she intended to do with her mind. The body just didn't align. And it was very frustrating for her. And she got, you know, mad at herself and, you know, I think hid it as well as she could for me and my little brother so that we didn't, you know, get too concerned. But, yeah, there really wasn't much of a community for her because at that time her mom, you know, my grandmother had passed. So, you know, she would go to doctors and get whatever treatment she could and, you know, physical therapy, whatever she could do. But, you know, then ended up passing away years later. Yeah, it's pretty terrible. And so, you know, whatever I can do to help you guys find a cure so no one has to go through that ever again would be phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry you had to go through that and through mother and all that. And
it
breaks my heart to think
genetic,
still,
as you know. So I've not gotten a genetic test. You know, we're not having kids yet. And, you know, I'm sure we'll cross that bridge the next year or two and start doing all the blood tests and seeing if I, you know, I'm a likely candidate for it or if I'm, you know, in my body at all. You know, I don't know. And so it obviously is very close to me. Even, you know, even besides the fact that I grew up around it, it could still happen to me in, you know, 10 years or sooner. So I don't know. So that's kind of where I'm at. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know who to call if you have.
I do. Yeah. Absolutely, I do. Thank you. Yeah. Good point.
And it also, you know, and it breaks my heart that there are people out there who still are as isolated as your mother was, and they don't need to be anymore. I mean, they, you know, they're just a click away, but, you know, people don't, you know, it astonishes me how many people still don't find their way to the support that's there and the community that's there. So we appreciate your work in helping us to try to get the word out to more and more people. That's so important.
No, I mean, I agree. And then right back at you. And I think that's the whole thing with awareness. I mean, you know, money is obviously very important, but beyond that, it's, you know, been about awareness for me because, you know, if people say I've got cancer or, you know, it's like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, everyone's got cancer. Everyone knows someone who's been affected by cancer. Like there's not as much of a shame, but FSH is still somehow this kind of, I feel like a disease under a rock or, you know, more of a underground, less of a mainstream, you know, disease that I feel like if people get hit by it and, you know, start feeling it. And if they haven't grown up with it or no one's talked about it in their family, yeah, I feel like you're right. There's a tendency just to kind of feel, you know, guilty or shame or isolation. So that's a, you know, very good point that there's a massive community out there willing to help you and guide you through it.
Well, yeah, I appreciate every time. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I just appreciate how Max, whenever he has an opportunity, you know, when he's interviewed or, you know, anything, goes out of his way to mention FSHD and, so you're just a wonderful ambassador for us.
Well, I mean, thank you, and it's all teamwork. I couldn't do it without you. You know, you set this very moment up right now, and you've helped with everything. So I really, I mean, back at you, back at Amy, you know, Tim, thank you for doing what you do. It's a community effort.
Now, we did pose a little bit of a social media blast that you're obviously going to come on, and we had some people chime back with some questions. That they would ask you. So if you don't mind, I was gonna throw these are pretty simple. The one's kind of fun. But Z Zelinsky from Arizona actually asked Facebook asks, what role changed your life, impacted you personally that you've played?
Oh, I mean, yeah, definitely Dave Karofsky on Glee.
Right.
My life in every way. I mean, you know, my career, my, you know, fulfillment, my happiness, the people that I've gotten, you know, got to meet and talk to from around the world. You know, there's conventions I've gone to in London to just meet fans from all over the world that have, you know, told me stories and given me letters. And that's the beautiful thing, too, again, is that, you know, that was the community I really kind of discovered by doing Glee. Was that there's a lot of people across the world that felt, you know, isolated or closeted or that, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, freaks or outcasts. And I think through, you know, being at these conventions, I was like, whoa, like there's people from, you know, Italy and Norway and Sweden and Brazil and like, you know, so many different kinds of people, but they all bonded over this one thing. And there was a community and they all felt like a part of something. And it was really just eye-opening for me and beautiful. So I think that role and that whole experience changed my life in a lot of ways. So, yeah.
Now, this one might be, I mean, you don't have to answer this one. This is more the playful question from Frederico Gonzalez on Twitter. And maybe you saw this question already. Maybe you already snuck it. Yeah. How does he,
no, I don't know.
How does he
question.
Feel?
Yeah, Frederico, I know.
Oh,
yeah,
you know.
We go back and forth on Twitter. I'm aware
of good.
Who he is. Great
You're
guy.
Aware of him. Okay. He says, how does he feel about being such a big crush to the gay bear community?
the most flattering question I could have been asked tonight.
There you go.
I'm flattered and humbled and I'm very happy with that. That's I'll take
That's
that
good.
Title gladly. Yeah,
ranking.
Thank you.
Good.
Yeah,
and
so thank you.
Then the last one on Twitter from Glambert or at Glambert Guy 3 says, what are, and I guess this is a great way to kind of close off the interview with a great last question of, what's your future plans? Like, what are your projects that you're working on now?
Boy, there's a lot. Great question. I don't want to take up too much time. Basically, there's four different indie films that I completed this year, all varying from a cop in a post-apocalyptic movie and an ad agent in the 60s whose lesbian wife cheats on him with another lesbian. It's like a lesbian love story in the 60s. There's like some, I play a guy with a ponytail who operates a porn studio. There's a pretty big slate of movies that'll probably be coming out in a bunch of festivals over the next year. In addition to that, I'm getting into producing, and I produced a series,
very good,
called Gods and Secrets that I'm also in, that'll be coming out in 2018. And then a movie I'm literally shooting right now. It's called Foster Boy, with Matthew Modine. And, that's like a whole, it's like a kind of a courtroom drama, but about the foster care system in America and how corporations are kind of buying up contracts and placing foster kids in homes without doing proper background checks and kind of shining a light on that issue. And that was written by a guy named J. Paul Derritani, who was actually like a lawyer who battled a case like this, and it's kind of based on his life and what happened. So, so I'm executive producing that at the moment, and that wraps December 22nd. So, yeah. And then the next acting thing they could see me in is Criminal Minds on January 10th. So that's what's going on. Staying busy, you know, trying to get more behind the scenes and generate my own work. But obviously, you know, still doing the acting thing as much as Hollywood lets me.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, it's always great to be busy. You know, there's nothing wrong with that sometimes, especially in your line of work.
No, I like it.
When it's your passion. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't feel like you're working a day in your life, they say. And
right.
It's true. to get to tell stories and work with artistic and creative people and, you know, just build communities and shine light on situation. I mean, it really is the dream. So just hope I can, you know, keep doing it. But so far, so good. So knock on wood.
Well, June, do you have a final question for Max before we bid him farewell?
Well, do you have anything fun planned for the holidays?
Yeah, there you go.
My wife and I are celebrating our 2-year anniversary in a few weeks. And so
congratulations.
There's a beautiful hotel in Riverside, California. It's kind of random, but it's called the Mission Inn. And I'm big into lights, like Christmas lights, and like I love awesome light displays. And the Mission Inn has this amazing like festival of lights that's like 3 blocks long, and you can kind of sip on some hot chocolate and do a little horse and carriage ride around, and you know, kind of do that. So we're gonna go away and do a little, you know, spa massage dinner light festival kind of thing. In a few weeks. So I'm really looking forward to that with her. And then we'll just drive back to Arizona to spend time with my family for Christmas. And my little brother will come in from New York, and we'll all kind of celebrate at my dad's house. And and New Year's, I don't know yet. We'll see what comes my way. But that's and then just some, you know, R&R, because the you know, business kind of shut down for like a few weeks. So it'll be nice just to like turn off my mind and not have to deal with, you know, emails or auditions or meetings, and just kind of be present with, you know, family and friends, and just kind of enjoy the holidays.
Absolutely.
What are you doing, June?
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just, you know, it's family time. I'm going to be, seeing family. I got in a little fun trip for myself a few weeks ago. I went to Amsterdam just to see King.
Nice.
That's
Adam
fun.
Lambert.
Oh, that's a great. That's probably my favorite city in the entire world, I must say. That's a beautiful, beautiful place. Yeah.
I got my fun in. But year end is our busiest time of year for nonprofits. So we can't go too far. We can't go away. But
no, and
it's
and,
like
and
wonderful...
Giving Tuesday, we can't forget Giving Tuesday that happened yesterday too, which is
right.
It's still going on, right? We can promote that still.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
totally. Yes. Well, we had our most successful Giving Tuesday to date, raised $30,000 yesterday, which
beautiful.
A lot of it will be matched. We don't know exactly how much yet, because the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation did this whole matching gift thing for Facebook donations, and we got quite a few in or over Facebook. So hopefully we got some of that Gates matching funds. That would be really exciting.
I hope so. Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Look, even if they don't even match, that's still quite a number to get in one day. So that's excellent. Congratulations.
Yes.
That's great.
Yes, thank you, and thanks to all of our donors out there. We really appreciate
Absolutely.
It. It gets our year-end fundraising off to a great start.
For sure.
So, yeah, so I don't have any questions. I have a whole bunch of news and events and things coming up to announce, but I just wanted to thank you so much, Max, for joining us tonight. I'm sure a lot of our listeners out there really enjoyed the conversation, and I always enjoy chatting with you, so. Thank you.
Well, feelings mutual. Thank you. Thank Tim. I really had a great time, and anytime you'll have me back, I'd be honored. So thank you for everything you guys are doing, and hello to the FSH community out there who has been incredibly embracing and welcoming to me. So keep on trucking,
Absolutely.
Stay strong, and everyone have a happy, healthy new year.
You too. Thank you very
thank
much
you.
For joining us.
You
we
too.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you, guys. Have a great rest of your night.
Okay. Bye, Max.
So that was Max Adler, actor, huge advocate for the FSH Society. It was great to have him on. But we keep moving forward. June, you said you kind of teased it there. You got some news and notes for us, loaded up and ready.
Yes. So December, we try to wind things down a bit, but we still have a bunch of meetings coming up around the country. So I want to make sure people had a chance to attend if there's one near you. So this Saturday, December 2nd, we have our Minnesota group meeting. They are being hosted by Dr. Michael Kaiba, who is an international rock star for FSHD research. He recently published a very exciting new genetic mouse model of FSHD. I think it's one of the best that has come out. It really looks very, very promising. So he's inviting people to see him in his lab and maybe actually see this amazing mouse and talk about the all the exciting work that's going on there towards developing treatments. So
Excellent.
That's in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, Saturday, December 2nd from 9:30 to 1 p.m. And also on the same day in the San Francisco Bay Area, there's a meeting at Stanford Hospital in Palo Alto. That's from noon to 2 o'clock. And I'm very excited about this meeting as well. We have a whole fresh team of organizers, so it'd be great for you to get there and meet them. We have a speaker, Kent Drescher, who is a PhD in psychology at the Stanford VA Hospital. He has FSHD himself, but he specializes in post-traumatic stress disorder, and he's going to talk about how his own personal experience, but bringing insight as a psychologist into having FSHD, how it's affected his career and his work, his ability to, empathize with veterans who are undergoing, have PTSD. But also, he was saying there's very little research on the impact of muscle disease on FSHD in particular, on quality of life and on emotion and mood. How does this having this affect people? And we need to understand this better. So he's going to introduce that as a topic of conversation, a facilitated conversation, to say, as a community, can we contribute to advancing knowledge in this important area, so that we can be better able to help people cope with having this disease, know what to expect, know how to deal with the different ways in which people react psychologically, and so on. So I think that's really exciting. And then December 5th, the Sacramento group is meeting at Mimi's Cafe, which is one of their popular favorite spots. That's at 6 to 8 in the evening on December 5th. December 7th is the Connecticut Connections meeting. They've moved to Skype, or actually Zoom conference, I should say. So during the winter months, you don't have to get on the icy roads. You can just web conference, and they're a terrific group. So you can actually join them from anywhere. You don't have to be in Connecticut since they're online. yeah, you know, and you should. It's a way to have access to a support community without ever having to leave the comfort of your home. So, and December 9th, our Mid-Atlantic group is meeting at the University of Maryland in Baltimore at the laboratory of Dr. Robert Block, who has developed another amazing mouse model. This is one we wrote about a couple of years ago. We called it the Franken mouse because he found a way to inject human FSHD patients' muscle stem cells into the leg of a mouse. And by applying kind of electrical current, he's able to get those cells to grow and form muscle fibers and actually form a whole, like, human muscle that's in the mouse. So now you can use that to understand how the FSHD gene is affecting the function of that mouse or of that muscle, or you can use it to screen for drugs and see if you want to block DUX4, you want to block the degenerative process. Well, let's try this, right? Let's try that. Now you have a living human muscle in this mouse.
Wow.
That you can test this in. And so we have a chance to visit his lab in Baltimore on December 9th. And on December 16th, the Michigan group is meeting, I'll be attending this one. It's at the Grand Rapids Art Museum in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and we decided to have it there because it's a wonderful museum. It's one of the finest contemporary art museums in the country, and the director is a friend of mine, so I thought, let's meet there.
Hey, why not?
Right
before yeah.
the holidays, a nice outing, and so we'll have a chance to, you know, I'll be there. I'll be happy to answer people's questions about research and care and where things are going. And that's from noon to 2 p.m. On December 16th. So that's upcoming meetings. We'll have a whole slew of new things to announce in 2018. But I did want to make sure everybody had on their calendars our next FSHD Connect meeting. That's the meeting we have every other year that brings, you know, a couple hundred patients and families and researchers and clinicians together. That is on June 9th and 10th, 2018, at the Flamingo Las Vegas Hotel in Las Vegas. And,
nice.
Yeah, I know people have strong feelings one way or the other about Las Vegas, but a lot of people think it's a fun place to go with your family for a vacation and so on. But it also happens to be one of the most convenient places to get to from almost anywhere in the country. It has more nonstop flights. It has very good accessibility in terms of public transportation from the airport to the Las Vegas Strip. It has more accessible rooms than any other city in the country. So those are for us the most important factors. And we work so hard to make sure that our conferences are accessible to everybody. And so mark your calendars for just, and also I should say Las Vegas is a lot less expensive than, you know, the coastal cities. So that's important to try to keep it affordable and fun for everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Now that one I'm really looking forward to. I mentioned that to my wife when I saw that on the docket of where that was going to be. And she was like, okay, so when are we going to be able to start planning to go? So she's big into Vegas. So that was like ideal.
Oh, great.
It's like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that one's probably going
to
be.
Oh, so we'll get to meet in person finally after all this
absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely. After all this time. Yeah. After all this time, you can actually see this guy. So, we are definitely planning on that one. I think that's an awesome venue for it.
Yeah. So I wanted to mention a couple other things because we're going into the holiday, you know, gift buying season. So I really want to underscore this. If you do online shopping, if you shop on Amazon, please do it through smile.amazon.com and sign up with the FSH Society as your beneficiary, your charity of choice. And then Amazon will donate a small half a percent of every purchase to the society. So it doesn't cost you anything. You're paying the same as you would if you bought on regular Amazon, but now a bit of it every time you buy comes to the society. It's a totally painless and great way to support us. and why not? And you think about how much you might spend over a year shopping on Amazon. If all of you out there did that, it would add up to quite a lot. So we can't emphasize that enough. Please sign up for smile.amazon.com and make us the charity of choice. I also wanted to mention Anson Calder has a new line of wonderful wallets. If you want to go like high-end luxury leather accessories, please consider them because they also send out education about FSH and FSH Society in every one of their packets. And anybody will be delighted to have their products because they're very clever and beautifully designed and elegant and all that. So, and finally, on our website, under section under, it says get involved, support us. And if you go down to the bottom of that support us list, shop and sell, we have a list of books, children's books, and also some adult. If you buy them, a certain portion will be donated to the society. So there's a book called Along the Way, Roscoe's Journey, which is a prize-winning children's book by Belinda Miller. So she's donating $1 every copy sold. So if you have kids on your shopping list, get them Along the Way. Or
absolutely.
There's a couple of other books like that. This is supposed to be listed on here, and it's not, so I'll have to fix that. But there is also an inspirational book called The Wisdom of a Loving Heart by Nancy Louise Hammonds Rivers, who passed away, sadly. But it's a memoir. She had FSHD, but I found it really, really lovely. She's an inspiring woman who is very independent-minded and lived a wonderful life, and I think a lot of readers would find it, you know, an inspiring gift. So that's all I have to say.
That's what you got.
Well, that's what we got.
Well, thanks, June. Thanks for plugging us in with all that stuff, because I know there's always a ton of information to share. And obviously, they can find all this at fshsociety.org as well. But we'd love to have you on every show and just, you know, get people into the now, as we like to say, right? And let them know what's going on. So we appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, always my pleasure. Thanks so much, Tim. And good night, everybody.
Yeah. Good night, June.
All right.
So that is June Kinoshita. We had a fantastic time there with her and, of course, Max Adler. A lot of fun. I mean, just some great, great conversations, great guests. I'm really, like I said in the beginning of the show, just grateful to be here, happy to be here, happy to spread my passion of podcasting and radio and talk show and all that and kind of bring it into this world where I can help kind of advocate for the FSH Society. So very grateful for that. Very grateful for all of you, too, for listening. Don't forget now, if you're going to do your Christmas shopping, I know you will, and I know you're going to visit Amazon, go to smile.amazon.com, and then obviously log in FSH Society as your charity of choice that 0.5% will give back. It'll add up quickly. It also sounds like visit AnsonCadler.com or Calder.com for the wallets and leather. I just looked at that site real quickly as June was talking about it. I think it's got some cool stuff on there. I think I'm all in on that. And mark your calendars, even though it's like 6+ months away in June, 9th and 10th. I plan on being there with my wife, maybe kids in tow as well, as we go to that big connections meeting at the Flamingo in Vegas. So we will be there for that. Get in touch with all of us if you need to, obviously. FSHradiohost@gmail.com is my email. You can contact me that way. FSH@FSHsociety.org. At FSH Society on Twitter and Facebook, you can find them, FSHsociety.org. And if you missed any bit of this show, it'll all will be right back out there for a replay on Blog Talk Radio, all linked at FSHsociety.org. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next month in December. Take care. Good night.